Hi, this is Favi Fav.
And this is Pavelito.
And we are
Latinos Who Lunch, the podcast where we talk about important things like
much better. Hello, hello, hello.
Cachot, cachot, cachot.
Welcome back, bitches.
No manches, way. This time flew. How are you?
It really did fly. I'm doing great. Mild depression.
That's good. That's an advance.
Plantar fasciitis. I'm having a little bit of intestinal issue, so everything's normal. How about you?
I'm good. I've been a hermit ever since I came back from Puebla. I haven't really left the house. I literally have not left the house except for a couple of times to catch some Pokemon. But it's been probably the most productive time of my life since I wrote my dissertation. So it's good. It's good. Mild depression, still going to the therapists. But I'm good.
Wonderful. I changed my therapist. Shout out to Karen. I hope she's doing great.
Hey, Karen.
it's that time of the year when everybody like stays inside, and the depression kind of sets in, you know, for a lot of people.
Right.
For me, it's usually the summertime, but because I'm usually in Las Vegas and it's so hot there. So I'm all out of sorts now because I'm not even in Vegas anymore.
Where are you at?
I am currently in Ashland, Oregon. And if you've never heard of Ashland, Oregon, it's like the Truman Show.
It's wow, so
it's
pretty.
Perfect. It's so pretty here. It's perfect. I've never actually experienced the seasons. So from summer to fall. And yeah. So here, everything is orange right now. It is so fucking beautiful. And
that's nice.
I'm here teaching, actually. I'm the visiting artist, scholar, and teaching for the Oregon Center of the Arts here at Southern Oregon University. So I'm teaching printmaking and site-specific installation. And I am also doing a collaborative art show with my students. So it's really been a great experience so far. So, yeah.
So you're finally like settled for a little bit? Is that what I'm hearing?
Sure. Yeah. I'm here till the end of the term. So I'm teaching until December. I am going to fly back to Vegas to see my family for the holidays. And
nice.
I have an installation coming up in Longmont, Colorado for all my Denver friends. If you want to come help, I'll post on social media. But I will be here for most of the time.
Sweet. Okay, let's talk about food, bitch, because it's been 3 months.
Yes.
And I know that you're all over the place. Like, what have you been eating? Like, what's going on?
Oh my God. So, as a proud vegan,
is he his way?
As a representative of the vegan community, it's hard for me to eat places, you know, especially in Oregon. You know, the food here is so fresh because there's so much farmland around. And if anybody, I mean, Portland is about 4 hours away, I think, driving north. And if anybody's been to Portland, yo, the food culture is amazing there. The racism is also really amazing. and I'm experiencing it here, too.
I can't wait to hear all about it.
I mean, it's not strong. Like, it's very light. You know how it's like microaggression?
Yes.
Like, here it's like
tiny aggressions.
it's like a micro, like a nudge. You know, it's like not even a micro aggression.
A pebble.
I've been trying to eat at home more because I have an apartment here. And so I've just been making kind of comfort food. So right now in the fridge, I have some black beans like my mama used to make.
Did you make them?
Absolutely.
Nice.
Excuse me, as a proud vegan, sometimes you have to make food for yourself because okay. you never know what they put right, in right. pre-made food, you know? So a black bean paste, basically. So for all you Guatemalans out there, you eat the beans in kind of stages. So like you can make them like frijoles, you know, de la olla, you know?
Enteros, uh-huh.
Uh-huh. So that's the first iteration of it. And you just boil them. I'd put garlic and a little bit of seasoning and like pieces of onion in it just right. to give it some flavor. And then once you've eaten those for a day or two, then you kind of cook those down in a pan. And they're like a little bit more aguadito, but they're starchier because you cooked them down. They're also really good to eat like that, mm-hmm. especially in the morning with eggs. Right. If you're into eggs, I don't know. I'm vegan. I don't know that life. So then, and then... And then after that, you can put them in a licuadora and make them into a paste. And then so when you put them back into the sartén, you uh-huh. just like, you get a little olive oil, you brown the shit out of some white onions or yellow onions, and then you take them out. So you just infuse the oil with onions, and then you cook down the liquefied beans, and that becomes this like, it's like the same texture as hummus, you know.
Oof.
And so I've been making like tostadas, and I've been pickling a lot of stuff because, you know,
pickling, bitch, what is
that? It's not that hard. You just get a little vinegar and you put shit in it. It's not that difficult. If white people can do it, anybody can do it.
Anybody can do it.
So yeah, so listen, so I've been pickling cabbage, you know me and cabbage, I love cabbage. So right. I have a culturally appropriated Asian slaw that I've made uh-huh. and with a little toasted sesame oil. Very nice. And I also have like a curtido made. That's like just cabbage, carrot, oregano, a little jalapeno. And then I made, you know, like when you go to the Mexican restaurants, you can get the jalapenos en vinagre with carrots and stuff.
Simón.
Like I made my own.
Which la is, otra. Okay.
I know, because Ooh. It's so good when you make it yourself, because you can actually eat it right away, so it's still a little crunchier than uh-huh. than the cans we get at the store have been sitting there for months, you know what I mean?
Mushies. Yeah,
and then you can control the salt levels. Yeah, so that's, I've been eating all sorts of stuff here in beautiful Ashland, Oregon. How about you?
You know who makes the best serranos en vinagre is La Maddie.
Your friend Maddie? What
Shout
is she,
out to
well,
Maddie
she do
in,
it?
In New Mexico. I have no idea, but sends us two cans of serranos, and that shit was on fire, but they were so fucking good. It's so funny you mentioned beans, because I've been wanting to talk about beans for a while. I'm going to tell you why.
Because get into it.
Yes. Because my dad, it's all about beans, right? And my dad... O sea, no le puede servir nada si no le sirve sus frijoles. So as a kid, there were beans on the table every fucking day. So I think there was some internalized racism in me that I just fucking rejected them. And I hated beans for a long, long time. So fast forward to moving to this new apartment that we're at here at Bridgeport. And my husband is like, I want beans. And I'm like, I don't fucking do beans, but fuck it. So he boiled beans one day. Bitch, we eat them almost every day now. And my favorite way to do it is agarrar la grasita, because I'm not vegan. Agarrar la grasita del bacon, because that's my fat. That's my, ¿cómo se dice? The pork grease. So agarrar la grasa del bacon, and then you just like make that grease super, super fucking hot, and then you add the beans after you boil them and everything. And my mom makes this salsa for these tacos dorados that she make, and the salsa is just, you put 10 chiles de árbol to one tomato, one garlic, and a little piece of onion, and then some cumin, and salt, and that's it. No los tuestas, you don't boil them, nothing. So I make buckets of that salsa. So every time I make beans, I add like a shitload of that salsa into, so like all the raw chiles and everything cooks con el caldito de los beans. Bitch, that has become my favorite thing. So now I have to have beans all the time, and that's pretty much what I've been doing, because I've been trying to save money and I've been working a lot in the house. So I've just been cooking. I haven't been, I've always cooked, like it's always been my thing, but ever since, in a way, by the time we started the podcast is when things started to get really busy and I was with my dissertation, so I didn't really cook as much as I used to. So now that I'm finally settled, I've been cooking everything, absolutely everything, and I'm always inviting people. And we're obsessed. Have you ever watched America's Test Kitchen?
Oh my God, that is like my shit. Are you kidding me? Are you fucking kidding me? When they're like, what cookie sheet is the best sheet? We took 20 sheets and here are the results. I'm like, see, this is white people doing the work they need to be doing. This is what I want to know. Yes, please tell me what food processor is the best for making pie crust. It's the best fucking show ever. I was really sad when the original guy left, but I think they still continued the show, right?
We're so obsessed with that show that we're like in our heads writing fan fiction about it, because there's like this lady called Becky, and she seems to me like ¿cómo se llama that comedian from Bridesmaid? That white lady from SNL?
Kristen Wiig.
Yeah, she looks like Kristen Wiig to me. She looks like a Kristen Wiig character. So I think like we always talk about how she has all this like sexual energy that is repressed. So she always makes this innuendo jokes in all her recipes. But I've been doing all of her recipes, and they're all so good. But of course, they are for white palates, so you always have to add a little bit more. Mm-hmm. And my favorite,
Becky, yeah, colonizing your kitchen, girl. Uh-huh, go ahead,
decolonizing your kitchen. There's a new guy, because there's now younger people that makes this. ¿Cómo se llama? Sopa de cauliflower, bitch. It's cream of cauliflower without cream.
Sopa de cauliflower. Hey!
Pues that's it. Like, I've been making that fucking... I think I made that soup 4 times since the summer. And I actually have some in the fridge. But yeah, I've just been cooking and cooking. And we live close to Chinatown, so we do a lot of dim sum as well. But
where do you live for new listeners?
So I live in Bridgeport, which in a way is between Chinatown and Pilsen. So we get
in what city?
In Chicago. In Chicagoztlán, in Chicago. I'm still here. Okay. I think I'm gonna be here for a while, man. In fact, my husband is applying to grad school, so I think we're gonna be here for a while. But
cool.
I'm still applying to other colleges. I'm applying to San Bernardino, Riverside, Northwestern. We'll see what happens. But I'm not gonna say, I mean, I am gonna say it. It's finally growing on me. But this is because I was here for the summer, and this city is fucking beautiful.
Yeah.
Pero this, y ahorita se ve bien bonita, right? Because it's just like everything is red, como dices tú, and it's fucking gorgeous. Pero el invierno empieza y va a valer vergas, güey. So we'll see how this winter goes. Because, ay, ay, ay. It's brutal. It's fucking brutal. This is
why. Verges. Hey, listen.
Dime, dime.
So speaking of America's Test Kitchen, do you watch British Bake Off?
I've watched one season. I haven't watched
it. Oh my God, bitch. You better get your life together because this last season, it's an emotional roller coaster. Okay?
I'm watching it. I'm fucking watching it.
I am so in love with everybody. By the time this comes out, I think the season finale will already have happened. So No spoilers for anybody who hasn't watched.
Right.
But you know, I went through a deprogramming where I stopped like lusting over white boys. Mm-hmm. And it's something that I really worked hard on. But this show just makes it so hard because my weakness used to be like awkward, tall white boys.
Uh-huh.
And this season has some of the most beautiful,
awkward,
most awkward, cute. Like, I know they're really young too, so this is kind of gross, but it's just like, I just love them so much. And so, and they remind me of people that I know. So it was just, I've just been so invested in this season of Bake Off. Uh-huh. And there's also, even the women in the show, there's this woman, her name is Rosie. Uh-huh. And I feel like I have a, you know, like a psychic connection with her, or like a bond beyond
explanation,
beyond words. Uh-huh. Rosie, for all you Bake Off heads out there, Rosie is the physical embodiment of what I feel like inside. So when you watch this show and you see Rosie's face and you see how she reacts to things, that's how I feel all the time. And she's an inspiration to me. I never thought a white woman like that would be. She's a veterinarian too, which I used to want to be a veterinarian. She's living my dreams. And she's just free. She's just a ball of anxiety. She don't give a fuck. She's doing her thing. She's making things she loves. Oh my God. You gotta watch Michael Henry. Oh my gosh. You're gonna see exactly what I mean when you watch the show.
But
literally every episode after the third episode, I cried. I was crying watching this show. I'm like, oh my God, come on, just give him another chance. He can make the biscuits better, I swear. Oh, it's so good.
You get
it's
so invested good. On that shit. Does it make you want to bake? Or are you just like,
hell no, I don't want to bake. Are you fucking kidding me? I gotta measure shit? No, thank you. No, I'm gonna stick to my black beans, okay?
Nice. No, I'm watching another food show, but it's kind of like the opposite. So I think I'm gonna go back to the British baking show. I'm watching an anime. It's called Food Wars. Dude, it's so fucking extra. Like, I hate it, but I love it. It's about...
It's anime?
It's anime, yeah. So it's... My sister told me about it because I told her that I've been watching some anime. And she told me about the show. And I guess it's all these kids that they're like junior high and high school, and they go to this food school, but it's super mega competitive. It's so every episode is kind of like a Food Network type of show. Like it's just like competition.
But with cartoons?
Dude, the animation of the food makes you hungry. That's how good it is. Pero el pedo es que every time they eat something that is really good, everybody has a fucking orgasm. And they just, like, they get fucking graphic. And it's, first you watch it, and it's like, ugh, this shit is so fucking rapey. I don't think I can do it. But the trauma is so good. La trama, I don't know. I don't think it's the same in English. The narrative or whatever is so good. And then you just get into it, and, like, you forget all that shit. And it's just, I don't know. Like, you got to, I mean, you give it a chance. Just watch one episode.
I don't know. I have a thing with anime. It's hard for me to watch it.
¿Por qué? But... ¿Por qué?
I just don't like it aesthetically. Yeah. I've never been into, like, I tried Pokemon when I was young. I'm like, I just don't, you know, there's so many frames per second. You could do so much more.
Right.
I know there's a lot of, I know I just offended a lot of you fucking nerds out there. I'm so sorry. I know you love anime.
I get it. Yeah.
It's just not for me. It's just not for me.
But I was like that. And I started watching Miyazaki movies. And then after that, I came back to anime, and now I'm hooked. Like, now I need at least one series as I eat my frijoles con chorizo con fucking bacon fat.
And you know what? Another thing, you never said what kind of frijol. Not every frijol is created equal. What frijol kind of frijol are you using?
Oh, pinto beans. I'm yo soy del norte. I know. I need to migrate to black beans, because how you describe that paste, that's how I ate it in Oaxaca. But cuando los mueles en la licuadora, you put hoja de aguacate. But you also bake them with a lot of butter. So it's like, it is like you say, like it's like a hummus. So I will try black beans, but I don't know. I think I rejected beans, like pinto beans, for so long, and now they're just part of my daily life, and I love it.
Speaking of Oaxaca, bitch.
Oh, that's right.
Oh, my God. Right after we released our last episode,
right,
I went to Oaxaca, and let me tell you, it was one of the most awesome trips I've ever taken, and it wasn't because I was out there living my Julia Roberts, you know, live, love, laugh, eat, pray, love.
It should die, fantasy. Como dice Kristen.
Yes. I was with really great friends, and it was during Guelaguetza, which is like this big festival where all the towns from Oaxaca go to the centro, to Oaxaca City.
Right.
And they like show up and they show out. And so it was a party every day. I think I was there for like 5 days.
Nice.
And
I drinking the best fucking mezcal, I bet.
Oh my gosh. So much. I really haven't drank since Oaxaca because it fucked me up. Those people are drinking all day. It was so much fun.
Yeah, for like a Lagueza, it's like a marathon of drinking.
I got so sick. I drank so much. But I got to Oaxaca, and I went because my friend Luis Rodriguez, we've mentioned him on the show a couple times, but he is a political scientist, and he has been our friend for a friend of the pod for a long time. And he always goes for Guelaguetza. And last year when he went, I said, dude, I'm coming with you next time. I don't care how much it costs. I'm going. I'm very rich. And so it wasn't that much. It was actually a really affordable trip. And so I show up to Oaxaca, and it was just, he's one of those people, let me tell you, that I mentioned the itinerary on the last episode. He had every meal planned out for the 5 days that we were there.
What was your favorite thing? I can't even.
My God. Okay. So we get there the first day. My flight was hella delayed because, you know, Mexico. And I get to Oaxaca in the middle of the night. Uh-huh. And I have to, like, there's no taxis because the airport was already closed. That's how late we were. Uh-huh. You know what? That was fucked up. They were like, the Oaxaca airport is closed. And the pilot was like, well, who wants to go still? And like half of the plane had already gotten off the plane because we had been waiting for like 12 hours in Mexico City.
Oh my God.
And the aeromosas were like, the flight attendants were like, there's no way we're going to Oaxaca. The airport closed in Oaxaca. Like there's not going to be anybody there to receive us, you know? Right. And the pilot, and there was maybe like 15 people left on the plane. Like I just wanted to get there.
But see.
And the pilot's like, no, we fixed the plane. We're going. And the flight attendants were like, fucking Mexicans. And they're all Mexican. And we get on the fucking, we get in the air and we land at the airport in Oaxaca and it's dark. There's like nobody there.
Oh my God. Pero como se bajaron? Like, did you go through?
We literally just, there were stairs and we walked off of the plane and then there was no taxis. So thankfully Luis helped me and like I like had to walk like a mile to find him like in some dark street somewhere. It was crazy. Anyway, so yes, visit Oaxaca, everybody. Okay, so it was an incredible time. I ate so much and
wait. Did you go to Itanoni? That's my favorite restaurant.
Girl, I don't know. Yes, who knows? I did so much. The first day we were there, we hooked up with Oaxaking. Do you know Oaxaking?
Oh, yes, Omar? Yes, yes. On Instagram, right.
He does these like super exclusive, really awesome tours of Oaxaca. And he heard we were coming. And so we hopped on one of his tours with somebody. And the first day, he like took us to go eat breakfast. And it was at some like in a tent. Like in un bosque somewhere, like where they were trading cattle. Like, so some like ladies just made us this incredible meal. Like, I'm telling you, everything. Then he took us to like a mezcaleria, or what do they call it? Like where they make mezcal.
Right.
So we went to a farm where they make mezcal. We went to El Taller de la Familia. I think they're called La Angeles. Uh-huh. The familia that like popularized Alebrijes.
Oh, you went to that town.
Yo, they gave us a tour of their whole taller, and then they took us to their farm, and we spent like the day with it was an incredible day.
Alebrijes town. I love that place. You just go from door to door, just watching all the workshops. The best part about that is that these people have been doing this shit for over 100 years, and the work is divided by family members. So like little girls work on sanding, and the fathers work on getting the wood. The moms work on painting, and they've been doing this for fucking generation. It's some fucking gorgeous work. And for those people that go visit and they try to regatear, ¿cómo se dice regatear in English? When they try to get the prices low, like, fuck you. Like, these people work really hard, and their life depends on this fucking work. So when you go, respect the prices and pay because it is fucking worth every single thing they do. Yes.
It's true. And so this family, they had a shit ton of those naked dogs. ¿Cómo se llaman?
Xoloscuincle or something.
Yeah, they had a bunch of those. And it was hilarious because the dogs like really love their owners. There was like 10 of them. And when we were When we hopped into the back of a truck to go in to go to the farm with the people, and the dogs were just like chasing us and like jumping into the car, into the back of the truck, you know. And there was this group of Mexican women tourists that were just like lost. And when they saw, they're like, "Miren, es el perro de Coco."
Oh, I know.
And we were just like, "Yep, this is the dog.
This is it.
This Dios is Dante." Mio. Anyway, it was an incredible time. We saw the folkloric dances. We ended up eating at all these amazing restaurants, and we ended up meeting an amazing artist in Oaxaca. His name is Fabian Chaitis. Mm-hmm. And he paints these really queer images with, you know, referencing Catholicism, and I'm sure you've seen some of his paintings. He has a really awesome painting of Zapata like naked on a horse.
Oh wow.
And then
no.
The horse has like a huge boner. So a lot of his art is in the big gay bars in Mexico City. Like if you go to La Purisima and all those bars, like yeah. He decorates them all. And so we got to meet up with him, and he happens to be the model for this new beer that came out, which is called Mushe. It's this new like hipster beer. And he was on the tour with us that day. And so we got to know him a little bit. I had no idea he was a beautiful drag queen as well as a beautiful man. And so when he told us, like, "Hey, there's going to be a party tonight," that same night, I'm telling you, the first day was wild. We went to this, to the Mushe like launch party. And he was dressed in drag. I have photos on my Instagram. If anybody wants to follow along.
I was going to say, tell everybody what like mushes are in Oaxaca.
Right. And so he was nervous because he's technically not a mushe. He's a drag queen. And so if you don't know what a mushe is, that word derives from the word mujer. Mm-hmm. And in certain villages in Oaxaca, the families that have sons who... that they turn out to be like non-binary, trans, they all identify a little bit different depending, mm-hmm. But they're all femme presenting. So they are actually celebrated in the village as like the keepers of culture and, you know, truly instead of ostracized, you know, they're revered, which is really cool.
Yeah, they're like they're like matriarchal societies that have been like that for thousands of years, right?
Yes. And so he was like afraid of meeting them because he didn't want to be disrespectful. But of course, he's such a nice guy that they loved him. And then they invited us to a vela, which was incredible. So
that's
in
so
Oaxaca
awesome.
City, it's kind of the opposite of the United States. They're a little bit more... they're a little bit more conservative in the capital in Oaxaca.
Right, they are.
Than they are in other places mm-hmm. in the rural areas. And so, you know, like here, like you go to Austin, Texas, and it's like liberal in quotes, you know. And then you go to little towns around Austin and it's like Confederate flags, you know. So it's like the opposite.
Right.
And so they have a vela, which is like their own event in the middle of the night, to like just have a safe space and be free, right?
Yeah.
So they do like they ended up inviting us that night. It was another night. It was like two days later, and it was an incredible experience just to see all the mushes dressed in their traditional dresses and them doing their traditional dances from their villages. They like did a whole pageant. So we show up to this, it's like a university. It was like, I think it was a university out in Oaxaca. Mm-hmm. And they like rented out, like, let's say they rented out like the gym of the university.
Nice.
You know? So it was like this huge space, and you have to buy a case of beer and bring it in to like get into the party.
Yes, that's your ticket. Mexico, fuck.
Mm-hmm. And you give it to a presila, which is like a person that takes your beer and will serve it to you the whole night. Like, you just tell them where you're sitting. And then it was like a pageant, and then it turned into just like an all-out party. It was incredible.
Girl, those are legendary. I think there's a YouTube documentary. I think I saw it maybe 10 years ago. La Vela de las Extravagantes or some shit like that. It's like it's whole, this whole thing, because I think it's been happening for a couple of decades now. But yeah. And actually they were just represented in Gay Pride maybe 2 years ago, because they were not part of that in Mexico City. But it's very interesting because I think part of the documentary is that it's not necessarily about this idea of queerness. It's just the fact that it's a matriarchal society and they... Mm-hmm. They are raised to take care of moms, to take care of daughters. So it's they become part of this lineage of female leaders. In fact, I know, like, if you go to the market there, it's pretty much only women. Like, they run the whole entire town. So the idea of being non-binary is not so much... It's not how we think about it in the States. It's this whole entire thing that it's tied to lineage, matriarchy, and history, which is fucking fascinating because we often forget we're so attached to our ideas of non-binary ways of looking at the world based on fucking social media that we don't realize that there's like original groups and peoples around the world where like that kind of things has been around for thousands of years. It's no fucking big deal. It's amazing.
This shit ain't nothing new, okay?
Exactly.
And I also had a lot of fun, I think, because, you know, like when you travel with certain people, like I'm somebody that I know I realize that I'm a little bit wound tight sometimes and I don't like let myself kind of just like be free. And like, you know, I was just talking about Rosie representing me, but like something about being with Luis, I really appreciated being with him because he's a person that's not afraid to express joy and like happiness.
Right.
And that like just like gave me permission to do the same thing. So like when we would go to like a parade or like some sort of performance, Luis is like, he just goes wild and he doesn't care. Like, he just expresses happiness.
That's beautiful.
And I'm like, I'm going to do the same thing. So it just felt so nice. Like, when we were at the parade, just to be like, yeah, just everybody just cheering and having a good time. And, you know, it's also like, fucking Mexicans know how to do fucking parades, okay? I don't, these whack ass like Macy's Day, whatever. step it up. Like,
but you're talking about Las Calendas, no? Where they have like the big puppets and all this stuff. And
girl, it doesn't matter. Like, go to Carnival. Latinos know how to do parades. Go to the fucking Puerto Rican Day Parade in New York. We know how to do parades, okay? Right, like, there was nothing sponsored. It was just like people showing out and celebrating their culture. It was so fun.
Beautiful, beautiful. So
I just want to thank Luis for kind of being my guide. And we ended up going to Mexico City together. And I was there really shortly for a day. I got to see Richardina from Songmas and my friend Michael Anthony Garcia, who has El Puente podcast, happened to be there the one night I was there too.
That's awesome.
I got to meet him and all of his fine ass Mexican friends. And then I hooked up with Fabian Chaides again, and he showed me all of his art, which was really cool. So it was just a jam-packed trip. And I met up with a couple listeners in Mexico City, so that was really fun. And then right after that, girl, I realized you told me like tell everybody what's going on, so I'm just gonna go really quick because I traveled a lot.
That's
during
what
this,
I'm looking
this
at right now.
2-3 month hiatus. But the one thing I will want to talk about is like right after that I went to Marfa, Texas. And if y'all don't know what Marfa, Texas is,
it's the opposite of Oaxaca.
No. Marfa, Texas is this like, and it's become an art destination now. It's just like this little town in West Texas. It's an hour and a half or maybe 2 hours drive from El Paso. So I flew into El Paso, and then my friend Crystal was living there at the time. So she picked us up from the airport. We headed to Marfa. And for all of you familiar with the art world and Marfa, Donald Judd was this artist that was very famous in the 80s and 90s.
Right.
And he made big minimalist artwork, and he like bought a lot of this town and like made it into this art destination. So just imagine like a pit, you know, like when you're driving from a big city to another one, especially in Texas, there's all those little speed trap towns in between.
Mm-hmm.
Marfa is one of those towns. But I don't know. It's hard to explain, but it's like a lot of people have invested in Marfa because it's like an art destination now. And there's a lot of really cool art installations that you can check out there. And so we went there and it was like this TV show. So there's TV show on Amazon Prime if you're interested.
It's so good.
It's called I Love Dick. It's based on this character, Dick Jarrett, who was modeled after Donald Judd,
right,
who this town is based, is who started this kind of art movement there. And so this town is exactly like that show.
That's it so was funny.
So uncanny. It was scary to the point that we were there, okay? And out of the corner of my eye, I'm like, oh my God, is that Devin? And Devin is one of the characters from I Love Dick. If you don't know who, if you've never seen the show, Devin, the actor, their name is Roberta Colindres. She's on
Vida. She's amazing, yes.
She plays Nico. She's that fine-ass character in Vida, Nico, who was introduced this last season and one of the main characters. And so we were at the opening of this bar in Marfa, and she's like there just hanging out.
That's so amazing.
And I'm like, this is like art turns into reality. It was like such a weird experience. I was too nervous to say hello and that I loved her in Vida and all this stuff.
That's such a badass character. Like, I seriously have not seen a Latinx character like that since that show. It's so amazing.
Yeah. And so anyway, Marfa was a trip. Then after that, I stayed in Texas for a while. I had a big installation at the Amon Carter Museum of American Art. So shout out to all of the listeners that came out and helped. I couldn't have done it without you. Thank you, Raul. Thank you to, I mean, there's just so many people. I'm not going to remember everybody's name, but I mean, there was Laura, there was Victor, there was Kenneth, there was Cynthia. So many people.
Oye, pero se te olvida the biggest reference about Marfa is fucking Solange. She did this whole entire thing and the Chinati Foundation. She did like a dance and there's like a movie and like a whole entire thing. It's pretty good.
Oh, yeah. It's all that weird art shit that Solange loves is there for sure.
Remember when we talked about when we did our episode, this was like towards the beginning, our Guilty Pleasures. We talked a little bit about Marfa because, like, the type of art that is producing Marfa is the kind of shit that I'm supposed to hate, but I fucking love. Minimalism is, like, my guilty pleasure. So I actually went there a couple of times, and they used to do these open houses in October where, like, everywhere from Texas and different parts of the United States will come because it will just be free and you can just run around the galleries. Otherwise, you need an appointment and you have to pay, and it's like this whole thing. But they will do this open houses and they will just take out like big like tables and they will just have big dinner outside in the street, and there will be like mariachi music and live music and stuff and always live like bands. So I got to see Sonic Youth. I remember that I volunteered in one of the galleries. I was drinking the Kool-Aid. I was living my Solange fantasy when I was a grad student. I fucking love Marfa. I haven't been there in a long time. So awesome.
Yeah, it was fun. We got in trouble because I didn't know that you couldn't stand on the Judds that were outside.
No, but no.
It's a big no-no, but I didn't see the signs because I came in. They have this place called the Chinati Foundation where they have these big outdoor sculptures.
Right.
And they're cement, like block-looking things. And I didn't know. And it was hot as hell. And so the only shade was in the sculpture. So we would just kind of like take breaks and sit inside of them. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, there's cement. No big deal, you know?
Wow.
And we posted some pictures on Instagram. And there's a whole Instagram dedicated to shaming people that stand on the sculpture. So they posted us.
Whitey bites, no mames.
They posted pictures of us on that Instagram. And then everybody in Marfa knows about it. So that night, we went to this place called I don't remember, some white shit that they're like, you can sleep in a teepee
yeah.
or in a in a Airstream. Like, you can sleep outside. Right. Like, my mom didn't fucking cross the border for me to sleep outside on purpose. Okay, bitch. Like, where is your nearest Best Western? Like, I need running water. Fuck you. Yeah, that's what I want to say. But I didn't say that. I said, yeah, I'll go to bingo at this weird campsite hotel thing. And so we went to we went to this drag queen bingo in Marfa, which was, there's like literally two drag queens in bingo. I mean, there's two drag queens in Marfa. And she just like stopped what she was doing. She's like, you guys from Las Vegas.
Oh, wow.
You are standing on the Donald Judds in front of everybody. We're like, oh my God.
Oh,
anyways.
No, that's so crazy.
It's a really small town. It's such a small town. It's funny.
Damn, you were fucking busy. That sounds so cool.
Okay, so then we were at DFW. I was in the DFW area, Dallas, Fort Worth. I got to do this really big installation at the Amon Carter, which is just, it was a dream come true. Mm-hmm. And I got to hang out with CYC Podcast. Might they came out to visit while we were out there. And Fried Papita, we recorded an episode, the second episode, the sequel to So Fat, So Brave, Too Fat, Too Brave.
Right.
If you want to listen to them, to that episode, it's on the Colores podcast feed and CYC, Cabronas y Chingonas podcast feed. And then I also got to hang out with Eva a lot from the Colores Radio and Pat. It was so much fun hanging out with them. I really miss them. So, you know, being there for almost a month was just so cool to have all my friends like so close.
That's awesome.
And yeah, I really hope to do more work out there in Houston, Dallas, Fort Worth, Austin more often. Right after that, I went to Raleigh, North Carolina, and did an installation. Dr. Denise Sandoval, who we've had on the show.
Yes, the Lowriders.
She curated a show about lowrider motorcycles, V-Class. It was called Viva V-Class.
Nice.
So it was really awesome. After that, I installed something in Carson City, Nevada, and now I'm in Oregon. So, you know, it's just kind of been nonstop for me.
Wow, that sounds crazy.
I finally feel like I've settled in.
That's good. I was thinking about it because, like, now that you're teaching, you have to be in the same place for more than a week.
Yeah, it's nice. I've got used to seeing white people with dreadlocks. So like it's not as shocking anymore. Uh-huh. Like before I'd be like, oh my God.
Like pointing at them. Tú, sí, yeah, like, tú, cabrón.
What's going on? Yeah. Right. And usually they're wearing some sort of like South American, like alpaca or llama designed.
Living their Andes fantasy.
Sweater. Yeah.
It's nice. That's so crazy.
Yeah.
So why don't we take a quick break and then I can tell you a little bit more of what I have been doing. I mean, it's not as exciting, okay, but I want to talk about...
we all knew that.
I want to talk about Vida because I pinpointed what my problem with that show. And we started talking about it before, but...
With Vida?
With Vida, yes. I finally figured it out. And it's based on this whole thing that I'm working on this paper because it's like a trope that I see everywhere. So I wanted to talk a little bit about that, which is related with everything that I've been doing and researching.
Cool. Yeah. Stay tuned. We'll be right back to talk about white Latinos. Guess what, Mimi?
¿Qué pasó, Mimi?
Lola's Cocina Salsa Negra is back again.
I need to stack up because no me duran, güey. Me las acabo bien rápido.
Girl, you gotta stack them up because one jar of Lola's Cocina's Salsa Negra is not enough, okay?
Just in time for the holidays, man. I'm gonna give that to everybody. But not only they have salsa negra, they have that vanilla sugar. You put that in your coffee in the morning, man.
Oh,
te endulza la vida. Ouch.
Nothing like pure Mexican vanilla in your sugar. It is so delicious. There's so many products at lolascocina.com. Our personal favorite, of course, we talk about it all the time on the podcast, is Lola's Salsa Negra. But just, you can go on there and see all the products they have to offer.
For Latinos Who Lunch listeners, Lola's been so kind to give us, guess what? 10% off on your purchases.
Oh my gosh. Just use offer code Latinos Who Lunch at checkout from now through the end of November to get your salsa on, motherfuckers. And if you want to follow Lola's Cocina on social media, because you know what? She's very popular. Lola's Cocina was on Oprah Magazine.
And Thrillist. She's everywhere.
Oh my God. I mean, she's just a regular Gayle King nowadays.
Yes, yeah, so follow Lola's Cocina at Lola's Cocina and Lola's Mercadito on Instagram so you can get all the details of the amazing products she has on stock.
Again, go to lolascocina.com, go to shop, use the offer code Latinos Who Lunch and get 10% off. That's lolascocina.com.
Well, as you guys know, we are completely independent-run podcasts, and we love our listeners, and we couldn't do it without your support. However, now we have some new ways to support this show. For those with commitment issues, the first option is to donate directly to our PayPal. It can be a donation of any size, and as many times as you like in return, we'll give you a shout-out on an upcoming episode. Our PayPal link is on the latinoswholunch.com donate page. Again, it's on our latinoswholunch.com donate page.
And for all of you committed folks out there, if you want to support us on Patreon, you can do that too. For only $3, you can join our shout out level and get a shout out for every month you subscribe.
But if you want to be more of a badass, no, everybody, you can become our comadre. You can get a shout out and an additional exclusive episode every month for a $10 donation.
But wait, there's more. Become a Latinos Who Lunch madrina at $15 a month and get everything from our first two levels. And we'll also send you an LWL sticker. Or actually, LWL stickers, plural, okay? We ain't cheap around here. We'll send you a couple.
Several of them.
And we'll give you early access to our episodes. And we have a few special episodes already planned, so we're very excited. Again, you can donate on PayPal or on Patreon. Go to latinoswholunch.com, donate.
Si se puede. Si se puede.
And we're back.
Yo pensé que se te había olvidado. Dude.
Nope.
Dude, so I read this essay by Sharon Holland. It's the opening of her book. It's on the erotic life of racism. Yes, it's fucking intense, but it's so good. I give it to all my students, specifically the opening essay where she talks about her experience on, she was in a parking lot and she was listening to Tupac and it was listening to that loud. And this white lady comes to her and starts complaining about how loud he was, you know, basically about how she was being black. And at that moment, she realized that this person approached her because she thinks she lives in time as opposed to this and supposed to her occupying space. So let me explain that a little bit. You know all those like Instagram posts when people go to like Mexico or they go to Peru, they always try to get this quote unquote authentic, fucking perfect picture of Peru, right? And in that includes, as you were saying, like people with their alpaca shit and maybe tejiendo en el piso. This whole idea that certain people to live, so we can live our fantasies, they have to just occupy space. As opposed to us who are taking the pictures, we live in time because we're part of the future, we're modernity, and those people are stuck in the past. So this dynamic of living in space as opposed to place, or just occupying space as opposed to living in time, has been in my mind a lot. And I remember when we discussed Vida and we discussed this whole idea, this whole issue of Las Señoras, and how there's like this big difference between the main characters who are like, not only they are light-skinned Latinos, but also there seems to be a big difference between them, their life, the way they look, the way they are, you know, the way they dress, to las quote-unquote las señoras. And I realized that those señoras, they are just there to occupy space,
while the rest of the characters are part of the narrative, so they occupy time. So when I was looking at that, I was like, oh my fucking God. Mm. That is the problem with a lot of fucking representations of Mexico and Latin America, that el gringo siempre está enfrente y los mexicanos atrás. They're just mise en scène. They're just like occupying space. So now this is one of the things that we've been doing in my landscape seminar. I am asking my students to see how Native Americans, for example, are represented in landscapes of the Grand Canyon, for example, or in landscapes, 19th century landscapes of Niagara Falls. And it's that. So this idea of just utilizing indigenous people or POC people just to occupy space, just so that the scene that you're illustrating looks more authentic, it's resonating with me. And I remember sitting in class looking at this big ass painting by Thomas Cole. It's called The Autumn of in Niagara Falls, and it just has tiny little Native people in it, Native Americans, and the idea is that they just occupy space because they didn't take advantage of the land and they didn't develop it, so they must be relocated or they must be exterminated. And when I was looking at the landscape, I'm like, oh my God, this is a problem with a lot of Latino shows right now, that there's a big distinction between the people that just take space as opposed to people that actually occupy time. And it's been bothering me a lot, so I've been wanting to talk about it because I feel like it's not only in Vida, but you see it, it's like a recurring trope that in order for people to identify them as Latinos, if they don't look Latinos, if they look light skin, you have to have those background characters, right? That are a little browner, or they are more folkloricos or whatever, you know? So I wanted to mention that because it's been in the back of my mind.
I mean, yeah, that's something that I think a lot of people have talked about, specifically now that there's a lot of political campaigning going on. And unfortunately, a lot of these candidates just use people of color as props,
right,
to put behind them or to stand next to them, mm-hmm, to show that, hey, look it, I'm letting this person take up space, but they're not. That's like case in point. Like, they're not giving them any time on the microphone.
Exactly.
You know, they're just there as a visual to show that they have a person of color as a friend or somebody to endorse them. You know?
Yeah.
And I was going to talk about this another day maybe, but it's a good time now that you brought it up. I haven't watched Saturday Night Live in a very long time because to me, it's just like boring and whatever.
Yeah.
And, but they just hired, for the first time in the history of the show is 45 years old. And let me just say that part. Okay. The first time that they have hired an Asian American to be a cast member on the show.
Right.
Okay. And so it's so fucked up. And this kind of rings back to that listener letter episode about Asian representation. This is like, if you want any more proof that Asians are the most underrepresented people in media, like, this is it, you know?
Yeah.
And so Bowen Yang, who is an amazing podcaster, comedian, writer. I've been a fan of his for a long time now. And I actually got to meet him once with Grizzly Kiki. We went to the same drag show. It was really fun. And they're on the show now. And not only are they taking up space, but they are like the breakout star of the show. Bowen is so funny. Like, just him being, you know, I'm going to say it, he's visibly queer. Like, he can't hide that he's queer, right, no matter what character he does, mm-hmm, which is really hilarious.
That's awesome.
And people just love him because of that, you know? So it's like great timing, I think, for him. But also, it also made me look at the other cast members on Saturday Night Live. And I forgot that there was a Latina on the cast.
Yeah, me too.
There's the cast member, Melissa Villaseñor, and I mean, she's white passing, so they, right, just basically have her as a prop on all the episodes now. She's just like playing a backup dancer.
Just occupying space.
She has lines. She has lines once in a while, but it's like, you know, that could be on her. You know, I know that on Saturday Night Live, like, they don't, if you don't write the skit or whatever it's called, the segment, and sometimes you don't get on it or whatever, but it's like, it's really frustrating to see that. You know, and it's like, it's to the same point. I almost feel like, okay, so she's not in a lot of she's not in a lot of the jokes, and she doesn't have a lot of airtime. So why do they keep her on, you know? Just to say that they have a Latina on the show? Like, I don't know.
Right, right.
I don't know. It'd be nice to talk to her, because who knows? Maybe she does a lot of stuff behind the scenes, which I'm sure she does.
That we don't know about, right.
But it would just be nice to visibly see her and to have more characters that are Latino or of the Latinx diaspora, however you want to say it.
But it's also, like, it's so important because we forget that this is just new things with media, because television has not been around for a long time, or film. But this kind of shit has been around in visual representation for fucking centuries. And that's one of the things that I was thinking about too the other day, that the colonial project has been around for 500 years and it's still here. And we are so used to it. We're so used to see people occupying space as opposed to time that sometimes we don't even question it. And when we start questioning it, we see that shit everywhere, from commercials to TV to movies to books to newspapers, everything. And it's funny because that's one of my goals now in the classroom, to be able to connect what's happening in this oppressive ass old paintings that I teach to what's happening now. So, and I talked about this before, that we look at Casta paintings in relationship to reality TV shows from Mexico and soap operas and stuff like that. But we always think that sort of this tropes, this old tropes that we see on paintings have no repercussions on our lives, but they run the way that we are represented. And just by looking at those landscapes of the Hudson School from the 19th century made me do all these connections with all this Latinx media that, like, it's all about representation, it's all about visibility, right? But the ways that we are represented, it's 500 years old. It's so fucked up.
Yeah. So, I mean, I talked about all the shit that I did. You don't want to say anything? Did you do anything fun on the break?
I mean, that. I've been thinking, seriously, I've been cooking a lot. I've been reading A Storm because I'm preparing two essays. I'm preparing an essay for a conference here in Chicago. And I'm also preparing an essay on the representations of La Malinche, the translator of Cortés, for the Fowler Museum and the Denver Art Museum. That's coming out in 2021. I think. And 2021 is when the Spanish defeated the Aztecs. So we are commemorating 500 years of that atrocity. So I'm working on those two essays. And I also wrote three essays for different artists. I wrote an essay for you. I talk a little bit about the good neighbor policy and how all of the movies and all the media that was developed.
Oh, we're gonna do a full episode on that. It's so fascinating.
Looking at those documentaries and reading all that stuff was so illuminating. So I wrote that. I wrote one essay for Yvette Mayorga, and that is published in Geary, New York Gallery, and I'll put the link. And I wrote about sentimentality and children. And then I also wrote an essay for Villalobos. That one is not available, but as soon as it's available, for Jose Villalobos, who was in one of our episodes this year. And that essay is not available yet, but as soon as it is, I will talk about it in the podcast and put it in one of the links. And also, my husband is proposing a series of films called Mexico Through the Foreign Gaze, which goes along, and I guess we can come back to this when we talk about the good neighbor policy, but he's looking at the ways that other countries have looked at Mexico through film. So we watch all this fucked up shit, speaking about people just occupying space, all these movies about gringos in Mexico, and again, Mexicans are just in the background. That's all they do. They do nothing for the narrative except for they frame the scenes with their sombreros and shit, and that's it. There was one interesting one. It was called Juarez. It's about Benito Juarez and what happened with Maximilian and Carlota in the middle of the 19th century. That was a really interesting movie. But what's also fascinating about this, which connects with what we're talking about before, is that they just are forms of propaganda. So all of these films, all they do is just show you how good the United States is because Mexico is so fucked up.
And even when these movies try to show you a good picture about Mexico, they just reiterate how fucked up it is and how good how good U.S. politics is. And I have a whole list of movies. But yes, we should do a whole episode on the good neighbor policy so we can go in detail into some of those movies. But that's it. Just looking, doing the reading. I also took my students to the Newberry Library. Shout out Ana Lu, who actually has been a really popular episode. And a lot of people have asked me questions about Ana Lu Lopez. She's one of the librarians in the Newberry Library. She took out maps from the 19th century from Mexico. She took out the map of that Cortes supposedly made in 1524. And we did a whole entire conversations on the history of Latin America through maps. So we had objects from the 1500s all the way to a series of comics that she pulled out for us about the Pueblo Revolution in New Mexico in 1680. And it was amazing because I have never had all these resources in my hand. I always talked about this stuff in New Mexico. I always talked about this stuff in Vegas. But being able to show a document as I'm talking about it during the semester has been amazing. This is why I'm saying that Chicago's growing on me, because there's a lot of resources that we're trying to take advantage. But seriously, just being at home, comiendo como loco y leyendo como loco, and that's it. That's it.
Awesome. Cool. Yeah. So just to start wrapping things up, because I know, I'm reclaiming my time. Oh my God, that makes so much sense now. Shout out to Maxine Water. She knew it. She knew it from the jump that time is very important.
Right.
Because, you know, these white people just take up so much time and they don't care because they're used to it, you know? And so,
right.
Latinos Who Lunch is coming out every other week now. And before, I used to pretty much edit everything, and Babelito was really busy doing everything. So now we're kind of sharing the project equally, which is going to be a fun experiment. It's fun for me already because I don't have to edit these first few episodes. So basically, Babelito and I we are switching off every other month. So this is Babelito's month, and I think you have a really good interview too. So you're gonna take one of my weeks next month too,
which
is going to be great. Yes. And helpful, because I have a lot of shit to do over here. But just to get y'all kind of used to our new format. So Babelito is producing the first couple episodes, and then I'll produce the next couple, which will be really fun. And another announcement, we actually have a new team member here at Latinos Who Lunch. Officially, we have hired Maite Sosa from Cabronas y Chingonas podcast as our official producer. So Maite has actually been helping us the last couple of weeks get our shit together. She is incredible. Mm-hmm. So you're gonna, maybe you'll hear from Maite in the future.
And I know, like, yes, we could do everything we could to come every week, but I think this is a good formula, because, for example, I've been striving to try to do more research-based episodes, but every week it's impossible to be able to do it. So knowing what we have scheduled to record and to talk about months in advance allows us time to actually read and sit down and do some research, so we can do not just Wara Wara La Cucharas, but do other episodes that I feel like our listeners like. And I think you guys will appreciate this new format. So thank you for everybody for your patience. I know some people were like, oh, I have Latinos Who Lunch
withdrawals.
Yes. So that was really cool to see. And again, thank you so much for your support. And Maite, you're amazing. I'm excited you're part of the team. And this is a new beginning, man. And I'm very, very, very excited.
Awesome.
Anything you want to promote before we go into recommendations? Any shows?
Well, as a lot of you know, I have another podcast. It's called The Art People Pod. And there's the Art People Podcast has had some really fun interviews the last few months. So if you are an artist and you're interested in hearing other artists talk to me, go over to artpeoplepod.com and check that out. I just interviewed the poet Vogue Robinson The artist Dionis Ortiz, Gabriel Garcia Roman, so many amazing artists, and I'm looking forward to continuing that project as well. And so go ahead and check that out. As I mentioned, I'm in Ashland, Oregon. So if you're in the Southern Oregon area and you want to meet up, there's several opportunities to do that. Every Tuesday from 4 to 8 p.m., I host a community workshop at the Schneider Museum of Art through the end of the year, basically through December. And so just let them know that you're coming, because there's food and everything. So there's enough food for everybody. We are doing a big installation called Together Juntos, and just making big, basically food sculptures and murals. And every week is a different kind of activity. So yeah, if you are in the Ashland, Oregon / Medford, Oregon area, come through. I've already met a lot of really amazing people here, and I just would like to see some more Latinos, please. So please, if you're in the area,
please occupy space and
please
time.
Take the time to come here. That's awesome. And so yeah, I think that's all that I have to in terms of like my events and stuff that are happening. We do a family days also on Saturdays. So check the website, Schneider Museum of Art. Google it, Locas. How about you?
Nice. I just have those essays, those three essays. As soon as they are available, the three of them, I'm going to put the link so you can, if somebody's interested on the stuff that I've been working on. I feel like I'm in a creative peak, so I really want to share everything that I'm doing. And I'll put the links on those two essays for now, and hopefully the third one I'll know soon. And also, I've been working on a YouTube channel. It's taking a long time. I want patience, but I'm so, 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 so excited. It's unsettling journeys. I'm putting, my husband and I are doing basically visual history of some of the things that we talk about in the podcast. So we're going to do a 6-part series on the history of mestizaje, and we're going to talk about from encounter all the way to today's media. So it's going to take like 6 videos. They're video essays, so they take a long time to write. They take a long time to edit, and we have hundreds of images to illustrate those essays. We both narrate the series. The first 2 videos, I'm hoping that by the end of this year, we have the first 2 videos ready. You actually can expect to see some of those videos at least every other month, because again, they're very long, but I'm really, really excited. Again, it's unsettling journeys. As soon as all of that stuff is available, I'll put it in social media. I am not in social media. I needed a mental break, and I feel good. I'm still depressed, but I feel good. So I know I left off a lot of things, messages from listeners. I know there was some listeners that were going to visit from out of town, and I invited them for dinner, and I never follow up. Just go to UIC website and find my profile. And you can send me an email if it's pressing. I don't promise that I will answer, but you know that I love to communicate.
Listen,
with
I'm just gonna say,
just,
I'm just gonna.
No, but seriously, because I do love that. That was one of the few things I love about social media, is to talk to listeners, and that's the only thing I miss. But I'm not gonna get back to it. And it's probably gonna take a long time. So we can make it official and send me an email, and I will be more than happy to answer it.
Well, you can just send an email to latinoswholunch@gmail.com, and then it could be forwarded to Babelito too. It's not that hard. You made it way more complicated, bitch. Just a quick public service announcement for all you hoes on social media. Uh-huh. It's exactly what it sounds like. It's social media. It's not important correspondence to me. So if you are a professional and you are sending me Facebook messages and expect me to respond to you in a timely manner, if you are sending me Instagram DMs, if you are sending me messages on Twitter and wondering where I am, it's social media, okay? Like, if you want to work professionally with Latinos Who Lunch or with me, send me a fucking email. I'm sorry, call me old school. But if you write a whole fucking dissertation on an Instagram comment or on a DM, don't you think it would be better to write that in an email format so that it could all be kept in one place and we can keep track of our conversation like a fucking professional?
Como dice Yaremi, copy paste.
Fucking paste, okay? Also, if you reach out to me and being like, I think I would be a great guest on Latinos Who Lunch, guess what, Mimi? You're nope. not. Because our guests have never asked to be on the show, okay? Right. So stop doing that. It's so fucking annoying. And all you fucking assholes tagging us and shit that we're not in, we see you. We're not going to buy your products on purpose because that's also annoying, okay? Leave your fucking concha shit out of our fucking tags, okay? We don't give a fuck. Let's see. What else do I want to get off of my chest? No, it's just like we give you the tools. Social media is for all of us to engage and comment and haha and kiki. That's it. That's fun. Okay. So don't be mad if we don't respond to you social media. And by
Nothing
the way,
personal.
Bavelito and I aren't even doing social media anymore. It's like it's up to our producer, Maita Sosa. So if we don't get back to you, that's why. Yeah, it's just a healthy thing to do. I actually have a time app on my phone. I'm only on Instagram 30 minutes a day. Good. Once I spend more than 30 minutes, it doesn't let me open it again. So I'm really trying not to be on it because it's not good for y'all. It isn't. Unless that's your job, then, you know, I understand, you know, like that's your job. You're a social media manager.
Yeah,
Shout out to all those
and
people
I respect
doing that,
that
work.
Yeah, definitely, definitely.
Anyway, keep doing your thing, children. It's so nice. Now it's time for recommendations. Do you have any recommendations, Babelito?
Oh, my God, Becky. Okay. I have so many. So
What do you keep calling me?
Becky.
I rebuke thee. Don't. You dare.
Okay,
don't
Mimi.
Make that.
¿Cuál Becky o Mimi? Okay, anyway.
My name is Favi on this fucking show, you piece of shit. You know what? I'm gonna. You don't like when I call you Babs? I'm going to start calling you
I
Babs.
I never said that. I actually liked it. I was reading an email that you sent me like 6 months ago, and I was like, huh, I like that. I like Babs.
Oh, because when I called you Babs to your face, you reacted like I called you Rosalia, okay? Like, you were like, what are you fucking talking about?
Rosalia is my fucking problematic queen. You call me Rosalia whenever you want to. Anyway, speaking of Rosalia, there's so much music, dude. So much music. There's so much music that has come out in since we started taking a break. One of the albums, for example, of Milton James, who's one of the singers of Denver, the beloved band that just broke up this year, came out this year. Y La Bamba, which we talked about in the podcast for like a couple of times, also had an album that came out since the break. Davendra Banhart from Venezuela also came out with a really good album. Wet Bass has two singles that are actually really good. And of course, Cuco, who now is a mega super fucking star, also came out with an album. But I'm going to refer to two albums. I'm going to refer to two artists, actually. One of them is Federico Durand. He is Brazilian and he does a lot of ambient music. And this is a recommendation I got from Angelica from Balloon. Shout out, girl. Thank you so much. This music is amazing. If you need some ambient music to work, to read, these are the perfect albums. One of my favorites is called Pavel. And his albums, there's like 10, I don't know, like 7 albums in Spotify. Again, it's Federico Durand. He is from Brazil, and it's a lot of ambient electronic music. This is not salsa to dance as you're cooking. This is really, it really helps you concentrate. So right now I've been doing a lot of that, a lot of ambient music listening. And also another band, and this was a recommendation from one of our listeners, a friend of mine, Eric, he's here in Chicago. He recommended Laura Lee Meets the Obsolete, and they are this psych rock duo from Mexico City. They moved to Baja California. I think they're originally from Guadalajara, but they have really good music, and I forgot the name of the album. It's called De Facto. The name of the album is called De Facto, and that came out earlier this year, and I forgot to mention it, but Laura Lee Meets the Obsolete, for those rockers out there, it's psych rock duo from, I guess they're now in Baja California. It's such good music, and I wanted to recommend more. I really wanted to go into Y La Bamba and Wet Bass, but I think I'll save that for the next episode because there's some really, really, really good Latinx music that has come out in the past 3 months. So those are my recommendations for today.
Awesome. I'm going to recommend a podcast and a couple other things. As far as podcasts, there are so many podcasts out there, y'all. It is so amazing. Shout out to everybody that made it onto the Forbes list and the Oprah list and all that shit. That is so nice. And thank you for all the Latinx writers that are writing about us and getting our names in those magazines, because you know Oprah don't know who the fuck we are. But thank you to all those art critics or writers or whatever. It's been so great just to see all the mentions happening. And also, you know what I thought was really funny is we took a hiatus during Hispanic Heritage Month.
I know.
That's like the biggest fuck you to everybody, because everybody's like, please do this interview with this person. And we're like, we're on break until we should take Hispanic Heritage Month
from
off
now
every
on.
Year.
Yes, definitely. I'm down. It falls on my birthday, so I'm down.
Taking a vacation. That is so funny. Okay. As far as podcasts, there are so many, but I'm just going to do one that I've been listening to. It's called Shit You Don't Care About. It's out of Texas. It's with Raciel, Eduardo, and Maria. So it's literally them talking about shit you don't care about.
Nice.
And so this is a good podcast that I like to put on like in the background when I'm just hanging out and I want to just like feel like I'm hanging out with people and I'm not, and I'm actually really lonely. Because they just like dive into different topics like and just like have a conversation like friends. I think the two are brothers and then their friend in the show. Nice. I think she might be related to them. But anyway, check it out. Also, I'd like to recommend, well, I've already recommended these podcasts, but I know that they're back from hiatus. So I mentioned El Puente podcast before. They're back. Also, Ansel Doing It is back. They just came back last week. Nice. So there's so many Latinx greatness happening. I also have a couple little shout outs because I've been doing a lot of traveling and meeting a lot of people. Shout out to Stephanie from Bidi Bidi Banda. It's a Selena cover band in the DFW area. After her show, we went to go to, we, Maite, Pat, and a bunch of us, and Eva went to the show in Dallas, and they opened up for Neon Indian.
Oh, sweet.
And yeah, it was a really fun show. And also, what a vision. The singer, Stephanie from Bidi Bidi Banda, is a huge Latinos Who Lunch fan. So I just want to give them a big, big shout out.
Shout out.
And our friend Sancha just came out with a new album too.
Right.
So
that's
if you are on Spotify or wherever you listen to songs, to music, check out Sancha's new album. It's called La Luz de la Esperanza. It's like a novela. She looks so fucking sick. It's incredible.
Oh, and by the way, I forgot to mention that in my Spotify playlist, Babelito recommends songs to fall into Un Abismo de Pasión. I've been updating it and I've been adding more songs. So all the bands and all the bands that I mentioned today, and including Sancha, actually, they're going to be right there, a couple of songs that I chose. So make sure to check that out. Yes.
Yes. Cool.
That's it.
All right. And as always, you can follow us at Latinos Who Lunch on all social media platforms. You can also visit latinoswholunch.com. Send us letters, emails, voice messages to asklwl@gmail.com. I'm going to say it one more time for the people in the back. If you want to ask us questions directly, email us at asklwlpod@gmail.com. That's asklwlpod@gmail.com. I don't know if I said it wrong, but I'll say it one more time. asklwlpod@gmail.com. Okay. Please make sure to leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. 5 stars.
5 stars only.
Because the more reviews we have, the more visible we are.
And visibility leads to representation, and representation matters.
Again, you can support us by making a donation to our PayPal, and we'll give you a shout out on the show. And you can subscribe to the 3 Patreon levels, which all come with their own perks. Both can be found on latinoswholunch.com. on our donate page.
And a quick shout out to our first shout out level Patreon supporter, Christine H. Muchísimas, muchísimas, muchísimas gracias.
Hello, 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 Christine.
Thank you so much for your donation.
This episode was edited and produced by Justin Favela, Emmanuel Ortega, and Maite Sosa. The music is from the band Brownout. I'm Favi Fav.
And I'm Babelito.
Bye.
Ciao, ciao, ciao.
Awesome.